Welcome, folks. We're going to be talking about films that were almost perfect, but not quite. Yes, films that we loved dearly, or at least accepted in our lives, but have one thing that kind of nagged at us and really bothered us in some way, and we're going to dissect it for you, because we can't have nice things. I'm Frank. I'm joined in studio by Al, Pope, Pete, and Nate. How are you folks doing?
Terrible as always.
Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there, taking it day by day.
I'm still reeling from the big reveal at the end of Tootsie.
I thought there was going to be a second part of that.
I didn't want to spoil it for everybody.
That's the disappointing thing.
It's Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, there you go.
Dang it.
Talk about big reveal, if you know what I mean.
Spoiler alert.
Penis. All right. All that's gone. Yep. All of it.
Aw.
Anyway.
My Tootsie joke.
We're going to start with the Tootsie joke and then go into the podcast. All right, so let's set up the general premise of this episode. Let's take a movie that kind of hits this or misses this mark. For me, it's Jeepers Creepers. So this is a horror movie from a few years back. So the basic premise is this. A brother and sister are driving across country. I believe one of them is picking the other one up from college. And some unusual things start happening to them out while they're driving out in the middle of nowhere. They're harassed by this old car that's like tailgating them and almost running them off the road. There are people who are dead on the side of the road, and there's like it's really intense and frightening and mysterious. You don't know what's going on, and the tension of the film is ratcheted up. I saw this for the first time in a drive-in theater, right? So you can imagine watching a road horror film in a dark drive-in theater. It was a really cool experience, and it really did hit all my buttons for a horror movie. It was mysterious. You didn't really know what was going on in the background. You worried for the characters because they seemed genuine and interesting. There's a part in the film where they're making their classic bad horror movie decisions, and they decide to go to the old house on the side of the road to try to figure out if they can help somebody who was in distress, I believe. And there they find like the den that this crazed person in the car who's been chasing them has, and there's like, you know, it's classic 2000 era horror movie tropes where like there's mangled bodies that look old, they're dead, and they've been like sewed up in bad taxidermy on humans, and it's a tense moment when are they or aren't they gonna escape from this house. It really is a creepy film, but at around the halfway part, they're in the dark driving, trying to get away, and this trench coat wearing person appears before them, and they see it and they hit it with their car. And I think they do the whole backing over it thing a couple of times. And what we find out is that this thing, this person who has been chasing them, is a monster who is this like bat-winged, crazy creature thing and is invulnerable. They hit it with their car several times and it doesn't seem to affect it. It's ancient. It seems to wake up out from its slumber every X years like a cicada or something. Mm-hmm. And it preys on the living. There's a lot of info dump about why it's doing these things. All the mystery and suspense and, horror of the film evaporate. It just becomes like an 80s slasher film with this big, unstoppable monster chasing them. And it's so disappointing because the movie was so good up until that point, and then it just tanks for me. It's just awful.
I can almost tell why that happens, too. Because it's not just like, it's a monster. Like, you talk about it. Like, it's invulnerable. It's... At that point, the tension is kind of gone, but not because our heroes are safe. It's because, I know they're not going to kill it. I know they're not going to get away from it. The ending is we know what's going to happen. The unkillable monster is going to come, and no one's going to stop it, and that's the end of it.
And I understand that for whatever reason, some people just clamor for this kind of thing. There are people who complain in monster movies and horror movies when you don't see the monster. I get it, and I think in many cases that's true, like in a true monster movie, absolutely. Yeah. But in a horror film, it's like a reverse Jaws. Jeepers Creepers, for me, is a reverse Jaws, where the shark is working all the time, makes many appearances in the film, and actually at one point starts to speak. It's just ridiculous. It's just such a departure from what the film was in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the trailer never hinted that this was a monster movie or if I had never seen the trailer. I don't know. You could go watch it yourself. But it was very... I think the monster, for some reason, obsessed over people's eyes, which was just a lame tie-in with the song Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah.
Jeepers Creepers.
Where did you get those peepers?
Like, that's it. It's just, it was so good, then became so bad. And I guess that's the kind of movies we're talking about. Maybe they don't all totally tank for us, but in many cases, they're like right there and then flat. So, Al, do you have a one you want to go through with us?
Thor 2, I feel, is a film that's like just so nearly perfect. Like, not nearly perfect, but nearly good. No, it is. It is nearly a good film because it has all the elements that really make it a decent film. I feel like parts of it, and I went over this a couple weeks ago, but I really believe this because like Thor's mom dies. It's tragic. It's an emotional moment for Loki and for Thor, something for them to bond over. And it's something to get the situation where the two of them kind of have to work together. And it's believable.
Right. It's like the axis of action, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like Loki wants revenge. That's a thing a villain can do and understand. And it's not contrived as to why they're doing this. The two of them go out there and they have chemistry. And there's a line in that movie where Thor and like they're bonding again or rebonding as brothers. And like you see Thor laughing and he looks over at Loki and he just, God, Chris Hemsworth sells this moment where he's like, oh, I wish I could trust you. And like, I believed it. And right. It was, and there were a lot of moments like that. And I feel like Odin finally had something to do and in that film. And it was like, there were such great.
Always good to give Sir Anthony Hopkins something to do.
Yeah, really. I mean, there really
he's
is.
He's really better when he's just, you know, sitting there as a piece of the scenery.
There you go.
I find.
Yeah. I felt like the villains were interesting. I felt like you had Christopher Eccleston as a villain. I felt like, great, awesome. I love Christopher Eccleston. He's fantastic. But honest to God, this movie falls apart because it's hinged on one thing that doesn't work in the film. The entire film and why Thor is like sort of like, oh, I have to protect Midgard and so on and so forth is because he loves Jane Foster. And the problem is that Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman have no chemistry at all. Like, they do not sell that romance to save their lives.
Really? You don't think they have any chemistry?
Nope. I think that there's a decent amount of, like, acting chemistry. But, like, him and Loki have more chemistry
on screen
than those two do.
You know, I want to agree with you on some level, but on the other, I'm going to completely disagree. I think they actually have really, really great chemistry between like Jane Foster and Thor. However, it's not romantic chemistry. They're just like really the best friends. Like I look at those characters and I see two people that like, they really like hanging out. They trust each other a lot, but they're never going to kiss each other and they never would. And if you're like, are you guys going to kiss? They're like, no, that's like my brother. I've known him since I was in kindergarten. But that's weird.
Buttestry is what
it, they're just like the coin. Best friend. What is it? No, there's a
it's
fun
buttestry.
Word. No. Come there's on. A really
Give
fun
me this.
Word.
Bromance.
Bromance. Aww, they've got a great bromance.
That's better.
It's adorable. Like they're
that's
really close,
likes.
But they're never going to kiss. And it makes no sense romantically.
I'm not going to agree with this, but I can't disagree with the feeling. I thought that I do remember there was at least one gif I've seen of Jane Foster checking out Thor's pecs. But that may have been in the first movie. I will say, though, you are right on the money. I didn't even think about it this way when it comes to Thor's mother and how that really should be her the loss of her should really be the more motivating factor in the brothers. Yeah,
all
right.
Like, there's so much in that film that, like, and also, like, you have, like, all these moments, like, all of a sudden Jane Foster is kidnapped and all this stuff happens and, like, she has the ether or whatever it's called inside of her. And it's just, like, God, it's so contrived. Can we just let Thor do Thor stuff? And, like, it's just so, ugh.
Quick, what's Thor stuff?
Huh?
What's Thor stuff? Come on, list them.
Drinking. Fighting ice giants and like.
Fighting ice giants.
Like, what do you, like,
what's a Thor stuff?
Drinking.
Drinking. What's a Thor stuff?
Not communicating with his family.
What's a Thor stuff?
Drinking while fighting ice giants.
And not communicating with his family.
Well, while you're fighting ice giants and it's drinking, it's very difficult to
communicate to his friends while he's fighting ice giants and drinking.
I would crowdfund a movie called Thor Stuff.
I need to point out that obviously you're lacking in your science fiction viewing.
Right.
Because if you really want to appreciate what it looks like to not have any chemistry with Natalie Portman, look no further than the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, I think Groot was good at that.
God.
It's hardcore. It gets everywhere.
Because Anakin Skywalker was so wooden.
Yeah.
So he's Groot.
Yeah.
I got it.
That's
worse than one of mine, friend.
No, the back of the cover of, was it Looper? What was it? What was the movie where Hayden Christensen was it Jumper?
Jumper.
Jumper.
Probably jumper. Half man. No, it wasn't the back of the cover. That would never have happened. It was some review. Half man, half tree. Hayden Christensen. Which I think is uncalled for in most of his performances.
Yeah. I do. No. It really is.
I don't know about that.
It's so wooden. Yeah. Every performance is so wooden. Sometimes it's called for. But, oh.
All right. So, yes.
Yeah, but to be fair, I get what they're going for in that film. I really feel like that's an inventive and interesting way to do a romance, which is like, there's this kind of like sexual tension of someone, like he's just very, very attractive and he's, you know, he's a god. And she's just like, I'm mad at you. And like just trying not to want to touch his pecs. I'm like, that's fair. That's a cool and interesting idea. Maybe that you could go with that, because we don't really see that very much where someone's like saying to be like, no, normally it's so far much the direction of the male being like, no, I have to fight my sexual urges, and be like, bunker down and have thoughts.
I encourage someone to sample the audio from Al in this. I'm not cutting this at all. I'm just going to let it go. He's actually grabbing his collar and he's doing
This will be good. If there's anybody out there that still makes soundboards.
Yeah, there you
just
go.
Please make an Al soundboard for the remix. This episode.
Yeah. There you go. But no, yes, you were saying.
Yeah, but I'm saying like that's not a bad thing to go for, and I would have liked to have seen it, but like that the chemistry between the actors,
you didn't think
it all falls apart, and I think the entire film falls apart because of
that. Yeah, I will agree that the film is probably weakened because they picked maybe the wrong driving motivation for Thor and Loki. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Okay, please tell me we have another one.
Yeah, I just saw the new Beauty and the Beast movie.
The live-action Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, the live-action Beauty and the Beast. And, you know, I really enjoyed the first one, you know, the original animated.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then I walked into the theater, and the movie starts with 5 minutes of exposition that they had explained in about 30 seconds in the original animated version.
You're right. It does have a lot.
Well, it's expensive to animate for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's when you're doing live action, it's a lot cheaper, so you can afford to do the exposition.
So you can afford to do the wrong thing.
Exactly. But it just leads in for too long, and it kind of, you know, forces a certain explanation, and it makes you dislike a character at first that you really shouldn't have any feelings about. And honestly, it just puts you in the wrong place, I feel like, to start the movie. And I had a hard time getting back into it because it really just like kind of forced the beginning of the movie when it didn't even need to have that.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would need to have so much exposition in such a classic story, except in this case, the exposition was an attempt to like rewrite.
Yeah, it was
like the whole, well, why did everyone get punished for what the Beast did? And the real answer is fairy tales.
And wizards.
And wizards. You know, magic is capricious and evil and crap. I don't know. That's it. But in this movie, it's like, no, we have to figure it out. And it's about child abuse.
Yeah, it's got to be child abuse. You can't just leave something as a vague concept of something that you're like, oh, they didn't quite explain this, but we don't actually need it for the plot.
Right.
Did we need to know that his father was abusive? And, you know, do we need to know her mother died of the plague or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah.
You know, things that are unimportant to the story, but, you know, I guess can create a certain...
Even saying this out loud now, I don't feel the urge to tell you, oh, we should be saying spoilers, because it's like, all right, these are things that happen in the movie, and they have carry no consequence.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, but let's, you know, let's front-load the movie with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Bell doesn't carry this, like, pathological fear of getting the plague throughout the entire movie?
I think Emma Watson plays it that way. Very subtle.
It's subtextual.
Very subtle. She's a great actress.
They subtextual.
She won the MTV Movie Award for this movie. But not
best acting person.
Yeah. I'm not sure about
best genderless type.
I feel like that award would have carried so much more weight if it was in a different... Anybody else had won. Like, it was a good movie. Fine movie. Mm-hmm. But like, it was like, oh, this is like not a huge role. I mean, any movie...
Yeah, because truthfully, like I appreciated the, you know, the cinematic aspects. Like they did like these crazy dance and singing numbers, all like while single shot on a crane flying all around.
The production quality, like,
wonderful choreography and stuff like that, and it was very visually just entertaining. The CGI did not suck, which comes up a lot in movies lately, I feel, and it was just, you know, sure she was auto-tuned, but you know I didn't really expect her to be able to hit every note like that. You know,
can I just briefly interject here, a little bit off topic?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like people who complain about quality of CGI in movies these days have not gone back and rewatched the Power Rangers movie recently.
Oh, God.
the not original the recent Power Rangers the movie.
Yeah, the Ivan Ooze one?
Yeah.
No.
Or Disney's Dinosaur.
If you feel really bad about how good the CGI is in a movie, go rewatch Power Rangers the movie.
Rewatch anything from the 90s. It'll really just distort your mind and make you happy about where we've gotten.
I don't know. T2 was pretty good.
Yeah, actually, yeah, true. T2 was actually really good for its time.
It's off topic.
Like I said, though, like 5 minutes of exposition at the start of the movie just kind of like ejected me a little bit, and it took me some time to get back in. But like, you know, as I loved the original movie, I felt like it was faithful, but also, you know, a good live action adaptation.
Hmm. Speaking of live action adaptations, Nate, it doesn't matter.
I mean,
nobody listens to our transitions. It does not matter.
By God, this is the farthest thing I could get from live action adaptation.
I know, that's why I went with it. Genius. This is all staying in the podcast. I'm not editing any of this.
Oh my God. Like a lot of people, I grew up watching, I liked Batman as a kid, and I grew up watching Batman Beyond, which is a very popular early 2000s cartoon, which in its third season had a movie, Batman Beyond The Return of the Joker, which ended up being very popular, and it had like original release that's the just sort of a weird version that's unrated because it was like it was a made for TV movie, and then they had to cut a bunch of stuff out of that version, and that's like the nice version. Wow. The unrated version is like the baby version, and then like they released it 2 years later, the violent version, which ended up being PG-13 because it had a lot of blood and death.
Wait a minute, let me explain. First of all, the Batman Beyond is the story of Batman in the future, where Batman has kind of retired and a new guy takes
over.
Yeah,
Terry McGinnis.
Yeah, but I think I understood this correctly. Batman, the unrated version, was the baby version?
Yes. It's very difficult to read the Wikipedia on it. Like, basically, they released this at a time when there was a lot of discussion on violence and in movies and stuff and kids' media. They were about to release this, and then they went, this is a really violent movie. And it was going to be just a made direct-to-DVD movie, and they were like, we're not going to rate this. We're not going to send this into the board. But they were like, wait a second. I don't think this will go over well with parents. They reanimated a bunch of stuff. They re-recorded a bunch of lines. They added in seatbelts and removed all references to death. Very amusing. And then they released that. And then 2 years later, when people were like, where's the real one? Where's the real one? Where's all the stuff we missed? They were like, all right. And they put it out on DVD. They had it rated and it came out at PG-13.
That's hilarious. Imagine someone being a real idiot or like a pervert or something who's like, I want to get the unrated Batman Beyond movie. And
it's the baby version.
And it's the baby version because they were like, this doesn't need to be rated.
Why are there so many seatbelts in this movie?
So many seatbelts. There's like they added seatbelts to scenes where there were no driving. There's just seatbelts.
The cops are all holding walkie-talkies. Wait, no, that's something else.
Yeah,
it's pretty great. I thought it was very amusing. But spoiler tag on this for a 20-year-old movie, because it is a really good movie. I watched the PG-13 one, not the baby version, but the bloody one recently, and I really, really enjoyed this movie because I never actually got a chance to see it, even though I really loved Batman Beyond. As a child. It's a really good show. It's really well done.
Yeah.
And the Return of the Joker hinges on, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's like 50 years in the future. Bruce Wayne is like a decrepit old man with a limp and he's angry and he's cynical. And little Terry McGinnis, a future boy, is just like, I'm going to be the new Batman. And he's the new Batman.
Uncanny impression.
I am the best Will Friedle out there. Just so you know, better than Will Friedle at being Will Friedle.
Of course.
But, So in this movie, the Joker just sort of shows up and he's still like the young Joker and everybody's like, is this the real Joker? Could it be him truly? How is he still alive? And then it's revealed like in the past, there was a horrible dramatic accident where the Joker kidnapped Robin and there was a horrible torture scene that was cut out of the baby version and like tortured him. And then he had to quit being Robin because of all the psychological trauma. Mm. He ended up in like an inpatient facility for a year. It was horrible. And this was a pretty dark movie. Like I said, it was PG-13 for a reason. There was a surprising amount of blood and murder and death, and the whole movie hinges on how is the Joker alive? How did he come back? Where is he? And at the end of the movie, like, gritty kind of semi-realistic movie, it's revealed like the Joker lived because when he was torturing Robin, he put a microchip in his brain with his DNA in it. And I know, and somehow that, even though they murdered the Joker like a million years ago and buried him under Arkham, like he was super dead, he's genuinely dead, he came back to life in Tim's brain 50 years later because of a microchip with his DNA in it. And I, what the hell?
Just to clarify, your issue isn't with Tim Drake, Robin, after a traumatic injury as a youth growing up and basically adopting the Joker persona.
No, because specifically he was tortured into thinking he was like the Joker's son and being a mini Joker.
Right.
And I completely
Your problem
expected
was the microchip with my DNA in it.
We went from gritty, sort of serious, like kind of weirdest, a little sci-fi, like, series that's about, you know, emotions and trauma and psychological terror kind of stuff to straight up comic book weirdo.
There was definitely a lot of sci-fi in Batman
Beyond.
Oh,
it's super sci-fi, but it's sort of like reasonable sci-fi.
I think it's simple. I think it's similar to what Al was saying, where it's like, you had a good option and you chose the worst option.
It was right there. Like, you knew Tim Drake was him, and it was sort of like, all right, cool. He's got the Joker stuff in his brain. He's all convinced because of his mind stuff, the psychological trauma. This is going to be really cool. He's going to turn around and, like, wipe white face paint on his face and just, like, kind of lose it, and it's going to be really cool.
He had a bloody microchip
in his brain. Straight up shape-shifted into the Joker. His hair turned green. He got skinny, taller. His face turned white. His voice changed. Like, he literally shape-shifted because of this weird DNA microchip.
You're not gonna like The Last Jedi, because Mark Hamill has got a plan for Rey.
Rey morphs into Mark Hamill.
Oh, that would be awesome. Or,
I was imagining Luke Skywalker morphing into the Joker.
Also great. But yeah. I was thinking BB-8, one of his chips. Is a Joker chip?
Oh,
well, yeah.
There you go.
It should be cut out of the podcast. We're not gonna, though. Yes, Al, you were conjecturing.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but I really disagree.
You like it?
I really like it. Like, I hate to say this, but, like, if I was when I'm watching that film, I thought
film.
For when I was watching this, whatever.
Yeah.
When I was watching this this movie, 110%, I was watching it, and I thought for a minute in my brain, is it just gonna be Tim Drake? Because that's gonna be really disappointing. Like, is it just going to be he's been emotionally scarred? He's like, oh, no, it's a chip in his brain. Awesome. Okay. So
microchips
Joker.
Make everything better to Al.
I hate to say it, but, like, I needed it to be the Joker. No. It felt disingenuous.
I mean, maybe it could have still been the Joker somehow. Like, I don't know, with another plot. But the thing was, like, every other single thing that happened in that movie was, like, a reasonable thing that could have existed and happened and made sense. And then you just had weird DNA microchip.
Wasn't this a movie with, like, a teenager who's flying around in a glider bat
yes,
suit.
But this is also 70 years in the future, and I can reasonably assume someone will invent jetpacks in the next 70 years purely because they're...
That's what people have been saying for 70 years.
This is
That's
true.
All I gotta say.
They're coming.
Oh, that is also another good point, because the Joker microchip thing would have happened well before.
That would have happened, like, right now, today.
Well,
no, 2002. This happened in 1995.
Elon
he
Musk
put a brain.
Is working on a wonderful... Listen, I think it's interesting when people actually disagree on what makes a movie great or terrible. So I'm glad that both of you are going to be fighting about this after the show.
Oh, yeah.
Let's
bring up a film with a problem in it that no one will disagree with. That's clearly a problem. Pete, you have one?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be non-controversial or whatever.
Right.
So you remember a few years back, there was this little film that came out. It was kind of popular at the time by a brand new director. It was called The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
Never heard of it.
By M. Night Shyamalan. This movie was, like, the biggest movie I recall in my lifetime, people saying, don't give away the ending. Don't give away the spoiler. There's a huge twist. Don't ruin it for your friends.
Right.
And the twist is revealed in the first scene.
Really?
Literally, the twist is shown explicitly to you in the first scene.
That's your problem?
Yes.
I think that's what made it masterful. Because you saw it happen, and you were led astray from it, and then they realized that you had seen it happen.
Unless you weren't. There was nothing about that to make you even think that this was now a flashback or something.
No, I saw it as he survived the shooting, he went on to work, but he's much more reserved now, and there's awkwardness with his wife.
See, I never got any of that. I'm sorry for everybody that I'm spoiling this for, but I'm not, because the movie spoiled it for you.
You can't spoil
Bruce
a movie
Willis
that's 30 years old.
Gets shot. No, it isn't.
How old is it? I remember watching
maybe
this as
20.
A child.
Maybe
20. Maybe 20.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. You had me scared for a second. There's no way that movie is 30 years old.
I know I watched it when I was like six.
So anyway, right in the beginning, shoots Bruce Willis dead, lying there in a pool of his own blood, and then he's walking into a house.
See, I'd agree with you if it wasn't Bruce Willis, because I've seen Bruce Willis get shot before and walk away from it. Like
you
I've
have,
I've seen him,
or have you seen characters that he's played get shot.
Well, yeah,
I was typecast as a guy that doesn't get killed easily.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but like, I would totally be on board with Pete if it was any other actor. But I've seen Bruce Willis shot in films so many times that I'm like, of course he survived. He's Bruce Willis. I don't know.
Well, there's only one way to prove this. We have to find Bruce Willis and shoot him and see if he gets back up.
I don't think that's fair. I think we have to shoot him in a film and see if his agent will allow him to stay dead.
Okay, so we shoot Bruce Willis, film it.
That's fair.
I would also like...
See if he gets back up.
I just want to point out also, since you know Shyamalan made the movie where Bruce Willis was invincible after this, we have to think about this in a time when Bruce Willis was not invincible.
Oh, interesting.
Oh my God.
No, this is a horrible example of this. I don't know if I can agree with this.
I completely disagree. I just think it... I think it's the most straightforward thing in the world. It was this one moment in the movie that if you had placed it anywhere else in the movie would have been brilliant.
Where would you put it?
It would have just... Mm. What if you
had dropped that scene and just had Bruce Willis, and then at the end, like after we do the twist...
Interesting.
All of a sudden, now you're doing... Oh, wait, no, nobody's ever spoken to him other than the kid.
I think it would have been a valid film without that first scene. I think it's better for the people who didn't see through it with the scene, though. That's my opinion. But I can see what you're saying now. Yeah. And in case you're wondering, it's not even been 20 years. It's been less than 20 years. 1999 was Sixth Sense, so... Everybody give a sigh of relief.
Okay, maybe I saw it like right after it came out on VHS. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Listen, Jeepers Creepers is a kind of an old film. And, you know, you might complain that that's not relevant to today's kids. So I will tell you about a film that is ruined for me. That is, you know, right in the zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist right now. This moment.
That's right. Recently released on Blu-ray, probably a few years ago, Iron Man 3.
Oh, wow. Mm.
I've talked about this before on the station, and...
Even the movies have forgotten that movie happened.
Yeah.
Well, literally true. My big problem with Iron Man 3, I mean, a bit of it is the fact that Robert Downey Jr. was clearly scheduled to leave at the end of that film. Like, it was gearing up to the, this will be the last Iron Man. And I don't know. I feel like there were a couple of choices in that film that happened because of that reality, and I didn't like them. But for me, the thing that really throws out, what prevents that movie from being a very, very good movie, or at least a good movie, to being like really disappointing for me, is the Mandarin reveal.
Oh, come on. We're going to do this.
We're going to do this again.
You're going to complain that he wasn't really the Mandarin, and yes. Oh, they should have used that old Chinese stereotype, or
right? So this is
like that's your problem.
That's the classic argument for people who have a problem with the Mandarin in the Iron Man movies. That's not my problem. I do not need to see the Asian stereotype character. I feel like Ben Kingsley did a great job with the Mandarin as a character. I think he did a wonderful job. I like how they made it relevant to today's age of terrorism. I even like the fact that it was a fake out, that he was Trevor the actor. What I don't like about the movie is the reveal that it was not the Mandarin who was behind all this. It was Killian, the other bad guy in the movie.
I see your problem.
The second banana bad guy was just elevated to top bad guy. he was the Mandarin.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm like, oh, why does it have to be a white Mandarin? I'm not saying that at all.
He wasn't even really the Mandarin. He was...
I think at one point he may have referred to himself, but it doesn't matter. The point, it was only like either you conceal that Killian was a bad guy, so that I'm at least a little surprised when it turns out that Trevor is an actor and the Mandarin is just like a conglomerate of businesses or whatever the hell it is. It was really just like, okay, well, we knew he was bad. So you told me nothing other than you gave me a funny scene with Trevor. And even Trevor wasn't... I guess if they had given us a Yellow Peril character and said, no, it's not really a Yellow Peril character, we wouldn't do that. It's really this guy. I maybe would understand why you kind of did that, but it was tacked on. It had no relevance. Like, that Mandarin that they had given us, the Ben Kingsley Mandarin, wasn't really that offensive. But regardless, Trevor, great character, the twist, fine, love it. Did not like the fact that it was the second banana villain. What I had really hoped for, and this was my fingers crossed, like if I can make it myself, is the Mandarin should have been the villain from the first Iron Man movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the no Ten way Ring is the guys.
I was going to say, no way is the dude.
The Mandarin. Not Ironmonger.
Far
not
out, man.
Yeah, not that character, but the leader of the Ten Rings group, I think he has the most motivation. You don't have to build up Tony Stark is a jerk and was mean to a disabled genius, and that revenge is what happened. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. You don't need to add all that stuff up. You got a character who has built-in angst. You have a villain problem, everyone says. You build a villain that's interesting, that actually maybe lasts for a movie. There's a lot of things you could have done to make it better. The worst possible thing I think you could have done would have been like, you know how we established there was a villain in earlier in the film? Like his PR, the villain's PR guy? Turns out the villain really is the PR guy.
I just want to jump in and defend the movies for a second.
All right, I'll just pot you down and hum in my head.
You know, you've seen the Hail to the Chief.
Hail to the King. I have seen the shorts that have come out
little short afterwards, where we find out that there is a real Mandarin that Killian based the guy on, sort of. He heard rumors about him, and so he created his own Mandarin that he hired Trevor to portray. And now the real Mandarin is not happy about it. The Mandarin's agents come and get him out of prison because they don't want the light to be shed on the Mandarin.
I think
that leaves the door open. I think if we ever get another Iron Man movie, that's what we're going to get. We're going to find out that the real Mandarin actually is the head of that Ten Rings organization.
And you know what? Again, if my major problem was that the Mandarin was a great villain, you should be in the movie, then I'd say, hey, that's not bad, even though it's like in an extended cut from something else. But my real problem is why did you show me the villain, then say, ha-ha, remember the other villain? No, it was only one villain. It was it was not dramatic for me at all.
No.
Because I already knew Killian was a bad guy.
Yeah.
So telling me he was the only bad guy just made me feel like, all right, thanks.
I'll actually say I think there's one problem even worse than that, and that's the reveal that I can't even remember her name. The woman that invented Extremis is actually working with Killian.
Oh, I totally
that
forgot
she was
about
the bad guy. Yeah, it's so unmet. I think they wanted that to be the big reveal.
It feels
they
added. They were like, let's have
it's like
more
twist
reveals.
After twist after twist.
And in reality, you were like, you didn't really need any. But if you did have that one, which was okay, maybe commit to the bit. Do not just reveal.
Make her the one that was in charge the entire time or something.
I think that was my big problem, too. I think I wanted her to have been... That would have been way more interesting and, like, actually a surprise. And then I was, like, almost surprised when it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been good. Oh, man.
But instead, we have Tony beating up some English guy in a...
And Home Depot Iron Man.
All right. Well, listen, we asked our fans, and by fans, we found this article on the internet... on a bunch of movies that would have been better with one minor change. And I'm going to quickly go through them all. All right? Ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
All right. So, from Clipped.com, 17 major movie roles that were almost played by Nicolas Cage. he was almost John Bender from The Breakfast Club. That was the Burnout. The Burnout character from The
Judd
Breakfast
Nelson.
Club. That's right. I would have... I think Nick Cage would do a great job in that role. Especially Nick Cage of the period. Or no, better. Nick Cage now. I would love to see that.
I see him more in the Ally Sheedy role. Actually.
Interestingly enough, Tony Stark as Iron Man. That's right. As early as 1997, apparently, he was in talks for this. But it went to Robert Downey Jr. Hmm. You know what? At the time, I probably would not have expected... Like, I definitely thought Robert Downey Jr., when he was revealed as Iron Man... not that he didn't have the look, but I was just like, I don't know, but the attitude... Like,
I always thought... My big concern about Robert Downey Jr. playing Iron Man is, will he be able to sober up enough? At the time, that's where our thoughts were. That's the space he occupied in the zeitgeist at that point.
Yeah.
All right. We almost had Nick Cage as an Aragorn from Lord of the Rings.
No.
Yeah, Viggo Mortensen.
You're lying to me.
Oh my God. I'm 100% in for this.
No.
No, wait. No, I would not be. I mean.
You know what? If you tell me...
Sorcerer's Apprentice, Nick Cage?
If you give me a choice between who's going to be Aragorn, Nick Cage or Gwyneth Paltrow's love interest from Sliding Doors,
stop.
I would go with Nick Cage.
This one makes sense to me. Joel Goodson from Risky Business. That's Tom Cruise's character. Tom Cruise, of course, inhabited the role, but... I'm thinking like time period Nick Cage would be fine in this. I think it makes sense.
Moonstruck Nick Cage though,
yeah,
really?
I think so. I think he'd be moodier than, yeah, yeah, I don't know if it would have worked. Willy Wonka.
Yes.
In Charlie in the Chocolate,
yes,
Factory.
Yes.
And so instead of Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Instead of Johnny Depp, I would be rewatching that movie now.
Yes, absolutely.
I like Johnny Depp. I very much like him. In that role, I don't think he tried something different. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
It was not Gene Wilder, but it was, I don't know, I just didn't really Nick like Cage the whole film kind of flat to me.
I feel like he was doing the Nick Cage eyes, the Nick Cage crazy eyes the entire movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Not into Johnny Depp. Would have rather seen Nick Cage. Would have been more fun.
Yeah, I would have definitely think he would have at least brought something interesting to the film.
Yeah.
Joel Barish from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. That's the Jim Carrey role.
The Jim Carrey role.
No.
No, I could have seen that one, actually.
No.
Yeah, I think he could pull it off.
Yeah.
Although the fact that Jim Carrey was in that role made it so like unique and interesting.
Yeah.
I think Nick Cage could have pulled it off in a different unique and interesting, but
probably.
And then Neo from The Matrix.
Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes.
Whoa.
I can't.
I know karate.
I can't even hear the difference, to be honest. But
because in Nick Cage's Matrix, he would learn karate, not kung fu.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's so important. That's a big difference.
Oh, my God.
I like this little note from the article where he passed on it because he didn't want to go to Australia to film it. That's awesome, Nick Cage. I don't know about this. I think Keanu is good for Neo because he's such a kind of a blank slate of a actor,
right?
You know, in a way.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. Hayden Christensen is a block of wood, but Keanu Reeves is a blank slate.
Yeah.
And then, stone is better than wood.
Of course, there is
not a floating.
There's Superman in Superman Lives.
Yeah,
the most famous.
It's so good. We don't even have to focus on it. Harry Dunn from Dumb and Dumber. That would be Jeff Daniels' character opposite Jim Carrey.
That would have been interesting.
I think it would have been much more aggressive.
I think it would have ended up with Lloyd dead.
Yeah.
By the end of the movie, Lloyd would be dead.
Can we just talk about Jeff Daniels for a minute in Dumb and Dumber? Isn't that like inexplicable? Like he just is in that movie and you're like, why is Jeff Daniels in this?
It's great. Very, and it seems so natural.
Yeah.
And yet,
I think he had two serious roles, like before and after.
You put it next to almost anything else he's done and you're like, what?
Like, and Dumber and Dumber 2 came out like around the same time as The Martian, didn't it? So like, and he was in that movie. And then, like, that was such a weird backlash.
You'd assume there was a Dumb and Dumber 2 with Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah, Dumb and Dumber 2.
Dumberer.
I was thinking Dumb and Dumberer.
Yeah.
No, those are
different movies.
Oh, God.
Vincent Mancini in Godfather Part 3, that is the role that Andy Garcia played. Which makes sense. Francis Ford Coppola. I don't know. I think that would have really hurt his career.
Sophia Coppola.
Yeah, I think it would have hurt his career. I think, like, there would have been too many Coppolas, or
you know what I mean? Don Knotts in too many Coppolas. That was great.
That. Brad Hamilton in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
No.
He was in that movie, though.
Yeah, he was in it, but he was going to be Brad. He was going to be the Judd Hirsch. No, not Judd Hirsch. Who am I thinking of?
Judd Hirsch?
You think you're thinking of the Judd Reinhold?
I'm not thinking of Judge.
No,
Judge Reinhold is who I'm thinking of, but yeah, I did say
you're thinking of, you're thinking of the Sean Penn. Role. Isn't that it? No, that's not it.
No, he talks to Hamilton.
Yeah.
Where'd he go,
and
Hamilton?
This is amazing. Green Goblin. He was going to be Green Goblin in Spider-Man.
If it wasn't Willem Dafoe,
I think the original Spider-Man.
I'm saying if it wasn't Willem Dafoe, Nick Cage is the obvious number two there.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
100% all in on that. William Dafoe, he can't do it, then Nick Cage. If it worked out, like, age-wise, I would say Nick Cage as Harry Osborn, just because I want to see both of them as an Osborn. But
wow,
it would have worked out because science. Randy Robinson as the wrestler. That was a Mickey Rourke.
Oh, Randy the Ram Robinson.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't agree with that one.
John Constantine in another Keanu Reeves.
I'm gonna be honest. I think I would have really preferred Nick Cage in that movie than Keanu Reeves.
There was a hot second in the movie world where directors seem to say, well, we want Nick Cage, but we want younger. Let's go with Keanu.
Mm.
There's also, Nick Cage looks more like Sting than Keanu Reeves did, and Constantine was based around Sting.
Yeah, I can see that. He is closer to the look. All right. So apparently, Scarecrow in Batman Begins. Nick Cage as Scarecrow in Batman.
That would be kind of fun.
I don't
actually
think that's accurate.
It is not. So this is fake. Joel Schumacher's Batman films were supposed to continue, and it would have been called Batman Triumphant, and would have had Scarecrow in it, and they wanted Nick Cage to be that.
Yeah.
In a Joel Schumacher film, 100% Nick Cage absolutely as Scarecrow.
Scarecrow nipples.
100%. These are
actually not who
absolute
I would
certainty.
Not who I would have cast as the Scarecrow in Joel Schumacher's Batman.
Who would you have?
Christopher Walken. Ostensibly he had already existed in the Batman in those Batman films. That's Max Schreck from Batman Returns.
He was almost Charlie Chaplin in the 92 Chaplin film,
again,
which is
Robert Downey Jr.
role. And Bobby Shatford in A Perfect Storm, or The Perfect Storm, which is another movie I've seen.
That's with George Clooney, right?
Yeah, it's George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg.
Who would he have been? Mark Wahlberg or George Clooney?
Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
Really? I see him more as George Clooney.
Well, no, I guess not. And I don't know if that worked, but I can't tell you because I haven't seen the film because
it's a movie.
It isn't a Marvel property, I guess.
It's a movie about a bunch of fish in a boat caught in the storm. That's it.
Wait, dies.
That Aquaman wasn't a Marvel storm?
Aquaman isn't in it. Pete and I just walked into the same joke.
No, I thought Halle Berry was in it.
In The Perfect Storm?
The Perfect Storm!
Yeah.
X-Men?
It's a Fox movie. That's a Fox movie.
Dude, the Marvel credit, Marvel little flippy book thing before everyone.
Who is a production company? All right. Well, that wraps it up for this week. If you like this crap, join our Patreon and support us in making more crap. That's right.
Better crap.
Yeah. Even better crap.
Even better crapper.
I love garbage.
That's actually going to be the theme for next month's show, as the non-productive garbage garage sale is officially on. Please look up our Patreon for more details. It's going to be your way of winning exclusive material from our prize closet that has been there since the late 90s. That's right. NSYNC posters, as high as the eye can see. Tamagotchis, most of them alive. Most of them alive. Stay tuned, patreon.com/notpro. Thank you all and good night.
Good night, everybody.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.